years. I'm Lakshmi Singh, NPR News.
Support for NPR comes from the Pew Charitable Trusts, committed to protecting our global marine heritage for future generations at pewtrusts.org.
News from NPR is made possible by a grant from Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, offering pinch-proof doors, keyless digital entries, and lifetime manufacturer's warranties. Champaign-Danville Overhead Doors, serving businesses and families with professionally installed doors and automatic openers since 1959 in Ogden, Illinois. Programs on WILL are made possible with support from Sinfonia da Camera, presenting Classics and Contemporaries with pianist Menachem Pressler on Saturday, March 7th at 7:30 p.m. at the Krannert Center for the Performing Arts. More information is available at 333-6280.
This is the Afternoon Magazine on AM 580, 90.9 FM HD2, and online at will.illinois.edu. Good afternoon. I'm Celeste Quinn. So glad you could be with us this afternoon. Here we are, almost 10 years into the 21st century, and slavery continues. The most profitable kind of slavery? Sex slavery. Sex slaves represent a little over 4% of the slaves in the world today. They generate close to 40% of the profits. Our guest today says it is one of the most profitable enterprises in the world. This afternoon, we'll take a look at how global sex slavery works, the economic forces that support it, and we'll ask how an end to sex trafficking and the toll it inflicts on those forced into prostitution might be achieved. Our guest this afternoon is Siddharth Kara. He serves on the board of directors of Free the Slaves, an organization dedicated to abolishing slavery. He is also the author of Sex Trafficking, Inside the Business of Modern Slavery. Listeners, you can join us this afternoon with questions and comments. I invite your telephone calls. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area is 333-9455. That's 333-WILL. The toll-free number is 800-222-9455, 800-222-WILL. Our guest, Siddharth Kara, is a former investment banker and business executive who left that work in 2000 to pursue anti-slavery research, advocacy, and writing. His first encounter with sexual slavery was in 1995 in Slovenia, in a Bosnian refugee camp. At the time, he was a junior at Duke University. He holds an MBA and a law degree. A portion of the proceeds from the sale of his book will be donated to the organization Free the Slaves. Sex Trafficking Inside the Business of Modern Slavery is published by Columbia University Press. Again, if you'd like to join our discussion this afternoon, give us a call. The number in the Champaign-Urbana area, 333-9455. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. Siddharth Kara, thank you so much for joining us this afternoon.
It's my pleasure to be here.
You say your work in Slovenia turned out to be listening to refugees. What kinds of stories did they tell you?
Well, as you can imagine, this was in the mid-1990s when violence had really erupted in the former Yugoslavia. I heard a lot of terrible stories of Serbian soldiers just raiding villages and committing, in essence, genocide. The most crucial stories that moved me were tales of Serbian soldiers who would go into Bosnian Muslim villages, round up the men and execute them, then gather the women and young female children and traffic them to brothels across the Balkan region and Central Europe beyond that. So those were the seeds of my first encounter with this practice of sex trafficking quite some time ago, and served as the motivation to ultimately commence the research that went into this book.
Yeah. And where did the research for this book take you?
I have traveled to more than 14 countries around the world, taken several research trips, and spent months and months in the field interviewing trafficking victims and other kinds of slaves, slave owners and exploiters, the consumers who purchase individuals for commercial sex, as well as their families, to understand the drivers that left them vulnerable to this kind of exploitation, and then trafficking police, lawyers, judges, just anyone I could get my hands on to try to understand how is all of this functioning? How is this industry functioning transnationally around the world right in front of us?
Yeah. The first story of slavery and its effects readers will come across in Sex Trafficking Inside the Business of Modern Slavery is of a young woman you call Maya. She was 19 when you met her. She'd been forced into prostitution 4 years earlier. How had it happened?
Well, Maya is emblematic of, in fact, the hundreds of thousands of women and children trafficked and forced into prostitution each year. The key driver of her journey was economic desperation, poverty. There was an offer for a wage-earning job, came through an agent who turned out to be a trafficker. She ended up in a brothel in Bombay, where she was swiftly broken down and tortured, and then, of course, coerced into forced prostitution and told she had to engage in this kind of activity to pay back the debt of trafficking her.
Had she not been able to escape, what might have been her fate?
Well, the fate of individuals like Maya and other sex trafficking victims is quite grim. Escape is rarely an option. Slave owners terrorize individuals as to the consequences of attempting to escape, which could mean torture or in fact, murder of someone who does try to attempt escape. Threats against family members back home are also utilized to terrorize individuals against never trying to escape. So escape is rarely an option. The fates invariably end up accepting a life of this type of exploitation. And if an individual does actually manage to escape, they are typically infected with HIV or other STDs, addicted to drugs and alcohol, and, of course, face the same conditions of poverty, lack of opportunity, maybe shunned by families, may not be able to get back home, and may have no educational or employment opportunities, which has led to the startling and woeful increase in re-trafficking, that is, the re-exploitation of individuals, the bare few who managed to make it free.
Yeah, well, maybe you would tell us here now the story of a woman you call Katya. She was a Moldovan.
Well, Katya, let me try to remember. Katya was...
She was re-trafficked, Moldova to Amsterdam, back to Moldova, to Turkey.
Yes, that's right. Katya and, in fact, another woman from Albania called Inez had similar stories in that they were trafficked and then coerced into forced prostitution. And then when they did finally make it free, were again re-trafficked from one country back to another. In the case of Katya, as you said, she was from Moldova, ended up in Turkey, then trafficked back through Moldova towards Russia, I believe. Inez from Albania was trafficked into Italy, and then from there, Belgium, from there, the Netherlands, back to Moldova, and then she was to Albania, then re-trafficked to Greece. I mean, just terrible, terrible stories because these individuals didn't have access to any sort of security or opportunity. And in the case of Inez, was shunned by her family due to the shame of this occupation she had been involved in, even though it was forced upon her.
Hmm. How often do those enslaved in this trade die, directly or indirectly, as a result of their exploitation?
Oh, well, I can tell you that the number is quite high. Very little work has been done into the life expectancy of these individuals. But a few experts I've spoken to, in fact, one in Bombay who's done some work on this, has said that those who make it free rarely live past their mid-30s. And that's, again, due to STDs like HIV, as well as drug and alcohol abuse, and you have high levels of suicide. And then, of course, many are out-and-out killed. But even if they make it free, the incidence of disease and drug abuse is not a promising formula.
Yeah. Drug abuse, alcohol abuse, suicide, HIV, AIDS, Has anyone tried attacking this problem from a public health angle?
You know, it's interesting you asked that. I had a couple of conversations with some medical practitioners up at Harvard a few weeks ago talking about the importance of looking at this from a public health standpoint, particularly an infectious disease transmission standpoint. You must understand many of these male consumers are married or have girlfriends or what have you, and there's a startling insistence among these male consumers of having unprotected sex with these slaves. A slave you can treat just about any way you want. That's part of the draw to, from the consumer standpoint towards the purchase of slaves. The other one is, of course, the very, very low retail price. Mm-hmm. Infectious disease transmission is a major problem we're facing as a result of sex trafficking. And the public health response, primarily also to caring for these individuals, if and when they make it free, is crucial. So many of the NGOs that have shelters around the world are so underfunded and under-resourced and do not have sufficient resources to provide the psychological care, the medical care, as well as the education or economic vocational training these individuals really require if they're going to have any chance at a sustainable life.
Our guest this afternoon in this portion of the Afternoon Magazine, Siddharth Kara, author of Sex Trafficking Inside the Business of Modern Slavery. My name is Celeste Quinn. Listeners, I invite you to join us this afternoon with questions, comments, 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. Let's talk to someone now on the toll-free line calling in on that line. Eureka, line 4, good afternoon.
Several years ago on the BBC, there were reports of people, I believe from a Scandinavian country, I'm not certain which one, had been charged and convicted of sex with minors, I guess, people engaging in sex trafficking. Has that been criminalized in the United States if persons go abroad to, say, to such places? I guess Thailand has had a pretty notorious reputation and other places in the world where this activity goes on.
Yes. Sex tourism, that is to say, the travel abroad for the purpose of engaging in commercial sex, is illegal under the Trafficking Victims Protection Act and I think another act called the PROTECT Act. And if caught, an individual can be prosecuted and convicted, and there have been some prosecutions and convictions. The important point, though, that this caller raises is about the law enforcement and jurisprudence response. And the key thesis that unfolds from a business and economic understanding of this transnational crime is that the enormity and pervasiveness of the global sex trafficking industry is driven by its ability to generate immense profits at almost no real risk. The level of law enforcement and judicial intervention in this form of slavery, like every other form of slavery in the world, is next to nil. As a result, there's almost no risk and cost associated with the exploitation of human beings for commercial sex.
In your view, the United States has not prosecuted very often in these particular circumstances.
That's right. The United States tends to have better laws and better protections and better enforcement than most other countries, but the levels here and around the world are woefully inadequate. Part of the problem is the level of our response has been completely misaligned with the magnitude of the crime, and that's because the magnitude of the crime wasn't truly understood. There was a lot of tangential analysis, a lot of awareness raising, but no real granular understanding of what is the business model we're dealing with here. What is the size, scale, and scope of this crime? How many individuals are caught up in it? What are the profits being generated, and how are they generated? In the absence of that understanding, the level of response has been completely inadequate. And it's my hope that in providing this detail, in providing this understanding, we can realign the response with the magnitude of the crime.
Thank you.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. One issue that you say is a problem here in what we're talking about right here and now with this caller, the use of the term trafficking. You call it linguistic attenuation. So what's the problem with the word trafficking?
Well, the term trafficking connotes movement, right?
Mm-hmm.
And the preponderance of the response from the global community has been to focus on the movement connotation of the term trafficking and attempt to deal with this crime by thwarting movement across borders. Now, these attempts have met with very limited results, and I can tell you why, having been to 15 or 20 border crossings, or the border crossings between more than a dozen countries, 14, 15, 20 countries. The reason is borders are almost impossible to guard. In many countries, there are easily passable borders because of dense vegetation or water passing, or most importantly, false documents. Very sophisticated organized crime groups can put together false documents, passports, identity cards, etc., that make it impossible to tell if someone is being trafficked across a border. So, as a result, the attempt to thwart sex trafficking by focusing on movement has met with limited result. Rather, we need to focus on the exploitation, the point of exploitation. So I advocate scrapping the term trafficking and incorporating two terms, slave trading and slavery. These two distinct crimes constitute the business of sex trafficking, and the slavery portion of the crime generates the lion's share of the profits, almost $36 billion in 2007, as opposed to $600 million for the movement portion. So we have to focus on the profit center, focus on exploitation, not movement.
Hmm. One appendix in the book looks at contemporary slavery economics. You want to talk about the information you assembled here?
Yes. As I said, I tried to build the first bottom-up, fully transparent financial model, an economic model for slavery around the world. Each type of slavery, each country, country by country, region by region, to build up a picture of what is the economics of the contemporary slave trade. So I've gathered all the data that's available, in addition to my own observations, my own calculations, being in the field in all these countries, and tried to provide a framework that can be used and improved upon, no doubt, so that we have a real detailed understanding of what are the profits and how are they generated in each form of slavery. Slavery is not just one thing. There are many forms of slavery in many different parts of the world, each of them functioning in different ways with different business models and different economic profiles. Understanding that will help us design more effective tactics to abolish the crimes.
Hmm. There are some tables that look at economics in brothels in the United States, in New York and in Los Angeles in particular. And they're pretty shocking, these tables. Revenues, let's say here, we've got apartment brothel economics, Queens, New York. Revenues, $72,000 plus $480. Total monthly revenue, $72,480. Operating expenses add up to $21,780. Gross profit, $50,000. $50,700 for a gross profit margin of 70%.
Sex trafficking, once you understand its economics, is revealed to be the most profitable illicit enterprise in the world, and for that matter, one of the most profitable licit enterprises in the world. The profits are immense. The costs are minimal. You see, labor is invariably the highest cost component in any business. The fundamental premise of slavery is to eliminate or virtually eliminate the cost of labor. And when you do that, profitability soars. Slavery is, of course, a human rights violation, but it is first and foremost an economic crime.
Oh.
So the net margin we're talking about here for sex slavery, 65, 70, 75%, dwarfs that of our most successful multinational corporations, Microsoft, Google, whatnot. The gross numbers, $10, $20, $50, or even $100,000 per slave per year, depending on where you are in the world, are tremendous, which clearly indicate why there's immense demand among slave owners to acquire more slaves, to traffic them and exploit them in the forced prostitution industry.
Yeah. In the 20th century, the U.S. government used tax law to go after organized crime. Could that also be a weapon, an arrow in the quiver?
I think the most effective response to eradicate these crimes in the near term is to focus on the market force of demand. Again, let's look at this like an industry. Any business, any industry requires two forces to survive, supply and demand. The supply side of slavery has to do with longstanding forces relating to poverty, lawlessness, military conflict, social instability, and acute bias against gender and ethnicity. These are tremendous forces that will take quite some time to redress, but we don't have to rely on the elimination of the supply side forces to virtually eradicate slavery. We can attack demand, the demand for profit that we've just talked about, and the consumer demand to find the lowest price retail lowest retail price commercial sex act, which is almost always provided by slaves. That means thwarting the demand side of this business model, intervening where you find slave owners and consumers transacting, almost always in broad daylight, by the way, millions of times a day to generate these immense profits. That's the vulnerable point in this business model, and that is where we need to intervene proactively and aggressively.
Let's take another call, a listener in Champaign on line one. Good afternoon.
Celeste, thank you for having this program. I wonder if your guest could talk a little bit about the historic demand. It seems as if this is completely out of control. It's a little bit hard for me to get my mind around this. I am curious as to why this kind of transaction between the patron and the slave is considered appealing, and how it is possible that our society does not look at this and address this. How is it possible to make this kind of profound damage better known? It's hard for me to believe it would be tolerated. Is there some kind of gender issue here that I simply do not grasp? And I'm just going to hang up and listen. This is fascinating.
Okay, thanks for the call.
Well, I would start by echoing the caller's sentiments. It is hard to believe why slavery, and in particular, the coerced sexual exploitation of women and young children, is so tolerated and receives such little attention from the global community. In the course of my research, I have been at an increasing level of loss to understand why we are not paying more attention and intervening and abolishing these crimes. The Emancipation Proclamation was issued more than 145 years ago, yet there are slaves in this country, and there are slaves in every corner of the world, even though it's illegal. I will say that the media has been doing a better job recently about raising awareness. The problem has been we haven't been able to raise effective awareness. It's been a little bit too sensationalized and a little bit too driven by telling a hard story, and less so about an analysis-driven response. And I'm hoping to be a part of the shift in that response. As to the scale of all of this and getting a handle on it, it's important to know that slavery has been around for centuries, if not millennia. But there are a few drivers recently that have promoted the swift and vast accretion in contemporary slavery levels, and they trace back to the fall of the Berlin Wall, November 1989, and the subsequent process and governance of economic globalization. Now, to keep it very quick and simple, in essence, the policies and governance of economic globalization during the 1990s unleashed catastrophic increases in economic disintegration, social instability, the evaporation of social safety nets across the developing world, which unleashed mass migration trends in a globalized world that criminals were able to exploit with shrewd efficiency. People were desperate to leave cratering economies and unstable societies into the Western world, and in that desperation to relocate themselves, they fell prey to criminals promising a better life, who then quickly conscripted them into various forms of exploitation, including forced prostitution.
Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana on line one. Hello. We have a caller there on line one.
Hello.
Hi there.
Hi. My question is kind of a follow-up to what you were just talking about. I was wondering how the legalization of the sex trade in certain countries has either impacted or enhanced this whole problem worldwide.
This is a very important issue, so let's take just a moment. There are very important arguments made on both sides of the legalization debate. That is to say, some argue that prostitution should be legalized because it can provide for greater protections and monitoring and less exploitation. Others argue, no, prostitution is inherently a demeaning enterprise that only promotes the exploitation of women and children. Two countries in Europe have taken up both sides of this debate. Sweden, in 1999, took the side of criminalization. They criminalized prostitution and the solicitation of prostitution. And the effect on sex trafficking seems to have been to lessen the level of trafficking into Sweden, and more so into some of its neighboring countries. That's some of the preliminary data we're seeing, not enough to make a hard conclusion. The Netherlands, Amsterdam in particular, took the opposite side. In the year 2000, they legalized brothels under this logic that legalization would provide for more protection. The preliminary data, again, seems to be that legalization has provided a veneer under which greater exploitation of individuals as slaves can take place. And the reason is you can beat and torture anyone into saying, yes, I'm here willingly. And then the conversation ends in a legalization regime. So the impact on sex slavery vis-a-vis legalization seems to be that it provides a cover or a veneer behind which greater exploitation can take place.
Does a listener want to follow up?
No, thank you. That's a very sufficient answer.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. This is the Afternoon Magazine. Our guest this afternoon, Siddharth Kara, author of Sex Trafficking, Inside the Business of Modern Slavery. You're tuned to the Afternoon Magazine. My name is Celeste Quinn. Let me tell you a little bit more about our guest this afternoon. He's a former investment banker and business executive who left that work in 2000 to pursue anti-slavery research advocacy in writing. His first encounter with the sex trafficking business was the trade was in 1995 in Slovenia in a Bosnian refugee camp. At the time, he was a junior at Duke University. He now serves on the board of directors of Free the Slaves, an organization dedicated to abolishing slavery, and he is the author of Sex Trafficking, Inside the Business of Modern Slavery. The book is published by Columbia University Press. 333-9455, the number in the Champaign-Urbana area, toll-free 800-222-9455. What are the economics of, and what role has globalization played in sex slavery in the United States?
Well, the United States has a slightly different profile from many countries. Number one, there's, in general, less law enforcement and judicial corruption here than in many Central European or South Asian or East Asian nations. Number two, the United States is farther away from many of the poor countries in the world. Transoceanic flights are required to traffic an individual from Asia or Central Europe. Of course, there's already a tremendous amount of migration across the southern border, and traffickers often take up positions on the U.S. side of the border, allowing the individual to take on the risk and expense of crossing the border. And then they, of course, promise a job, which ends up as a one-way ticket into slavery. And that, again, speaks to the problem with the term trafficking. Many trafficking individuals in the United States aren't trafficked at all. They've already migrated across here, and then they're given a false job offer or some other income-generating opportunity that turns into exploitation. So for the United States, the globalization component isn't quite the same driver as it is in many other countries. Globalization instead has driven some of the intense desire to migrate towards Western countries, including the United States, where individuals here, as in other wealthy nations, can find themselves exploited in any number of industries, including forced prostitution.
Mm-hmm. Let's take another call. A listener in Urbana, line one. Hi.
Hi. I have a question. As an American, concerned American citizen, how could I, what could I do to fight this crime? I mean, could I write a letter to my congressman, to call him? What can I do other than advocacy and education of the public, you know?
Important question.
Yes, perhaps the most important question. Well, the first one your caller already mentioned, which is awareness, education, and spreading the word. That is the most important thing an individual citizen can do. Now, there are a few more crucial things. Be a part of the of a movement, whether it means starting one in your community or joining one that already exists. Be a part of a movement that is predicated on raising the outcry up the channels to those in power, in government, who need to pay more attention to this. And there are many ways of doing that. You can write letters obviously, to your representatives. I think on the Free the Slaves website, we've got all the information required for a person to contact their particular representative. But sending that outrage up the channels is crucial so that, and the message is simple, we won't tolerate this in our country. Global civilization at this stage should not tolerate slavery anymore. Do what needs to be done to eradicate these crimes. And I've put forth my argument on what we need to do, but whichever the best path is, we need to be doing much, much more commencing with the level of resources that are deployed. Individual citizens can also provide support to the numerous NGOs that are dealing with this issue on the front lines and are severely resource constrained, either through financial contribution or through volunteer efforts. But there are a lot of NGOs that need your help. Finally, something I hope to do this year is to create a national system of community vigilance committees so that individual citizens who are motivated to want to do more can become the front lines, eyes and ears of a new brand of abolitionist coalition where they are trained to seek out the signs of slavery, to be advised as to where to look, what it looks for, and then report back to relevant law enforcement or other intervention forces, thereby advancing our presence and intervening in the crime and motivating the community, motivating individual citizens to be a part of a systematized intervention and abolitionist campaign.
Okay, listener, any follow-up?
Yes, no, thank you. I was just thinking of starting an advocacy group in my church so we can combat this kind of a crime. You know, I mean, it's really very... And thank you for your guest. It's really a very interesting subject.
Thanks for the call this afternoon. Next, we take a call from a listener in Chicago. Line 4, hi.
Hi, I get a question. I have the good fortune of living in Italy for about 3-4 months a year, and I've seen, what seems to me anyway, anecdotally, a lot of prostitution tied to illegal or clandestine immigration, which leads me to my question. What kind of documentation do you have? How does one find out how many sex slave trade workers there are, et cetera?
Yeah, that's an important question. How do we know many women and children are trafficked in the sex trade, exploited in the sex trade?
Sure. Well, if the caller happens upon my book, I provide in a great amount of detail, not just my calculations on the number of individuals trafficked into forced prostitution, region by region, around the world, year after year, but also the economic and profit numbers. And I also outline in the footnotes my methodology for arriving at these numbers. And the purpose of doing so is to be completely transparent so that individuals can scrutinize the assumptions and then hopefully advance upon them. What we haven't had to this point is any sort of transparent assessment of the size and scale and scope of the number of individuals exploited and the profits generated through their exploitation. There have just been some careless numbers put out with no explanation of where they've come from. And that doesn't do us any good. We can't advance our knowledge that way. So I would direct the reader to the footnotes of my book where I've explained my methodology in a lot of detail on how I've calculated the numbers, not just in Italy, for example, but country by country and region by region around the world.
Yeah.
Thank you.
What kind of estimates have you come up with in terms of numbers?
There are 29 million slaves in the world today. There's a growth rate with various forms of slavery. The highest growth rate is associated with trafficked sex slaves. That is to say that year after year, the number of slaves in the world is increasing. It is not static and it is not decreasing. The number of trafficked sex slaves, as of the time of this call, is around 1.24 or 1.25 million individuals who are trafficked and forced into prostitution.
Hmm. Let's take a look at signs of slavery. This is something you mentioned in your answer to the previous caller, the caller in Urbana. What does it look like? What should raise one's eyebrows and say, what's going on there?
Well, it certainly depends on the kind of slavery we're talking about, whether we're talking about debt bondage or forced labor in the construction industry or forced prostitution. So if we spend just a moment on forced prostitution or sex slavery, what does that look like? Well, there are six venues, typical venues around the world, in which these individuals are exploited, such as brothels, apartments, clubs, massage parlors, street corners, hotels, etc. It can be almost impossible to ascertain the difference between a quote-unquote willing prostitute and a sex trafficking or sex trafficking victim or sex slave. There are a few key things you can try to that researchers who are trained. I wouldn't suggest average citizens take this up and start doing it without some training. But there are a few key signs you can look for. Obviously, a primary one is age. If the person is a minor, well, then in any scenario, even in countries where prostitution is legal, they're being coerced. And that's something that is a telltale sign. Often where individuals are of another nationality, don't know the local language, that's another strong indicator that a person has been trafficked from one country to another. Beyond that, there are, of course, more subtle psychological indicators. A person who maybe hunches in a certain way, is jittery, won't make eye contact, may have a lot of scars or damage on their body. Now, these indicators can also speak to any number of other issues that may not be slave-related, but you can start to piece together an assessment of whether a person has been trafficked and, of course, forced into prostitution. The only way to ultimately confirm it is to try to have a conversation, a human rights worker or someone. But very often the individual won't talk or won't be willing to state that they are, of course, a trafficking individual because of threats made against them or family members back home.
Mm. How can we ensure better protection for victims?
Well, we need to do two things. The first is a massive resource-driven global response. And that response needs to have two components. One is protections for victims, and the second is intervention with the crime. So focusing on the protections for victims, it really comes down to resources. We do know how to take care of people who have been exploited in this way. We do know how to provide psychological counseling, health care, vocational training, educational opportunities, and protections for many people who end up participating in the jurisprudence process. What we don't have is a robust, systematized, global aggregation of this response because of a lack of coordination and a lack of resources. And that resource level has to come from the governments of the world, the global community, the United Nations have got to take this issue much more seriously and deploy the kind of resources we need to put together a global coalition of NGOs with enough resources, protections, and a systematized response to taking care of these individuals so that, A, they can participate in the jurisprudence process that will result in a conviction, hopefully, of their exploiter, raising the costs and the risks in the system, but number two, keep them from getting re-trafficked. They need a sustainable life, which is not just health care and psychological care, but a way to generate an income and a way to have a sustainable life.
Mm. In terms of the current human rights agenda in the world, where does this issue rank at the moment?
Well, I do believe we are making progress. There is more awareness about slavery, but certainly it doesn't get as much attention as some of the very atrocious human rights violations we find in sort of sub-Saharan Africa, for example, or exploitation of children, not just as slaves, but in any number of other ways. So we don't quite have that level of global awareness with the issue of slavery. But we are, I think there is more attention being paid to this. It's just not a sufficiently informed and directed and resource-driven attention. We have to close that gap. We have to close the gap between the level of resources and intelligent analysis being deployed to deal with this issue and where we are today. Mm. I think if we do, we have a chance to end slavery or virtually abolish slavery in our lifetime. We can do it. This is a crime and a violation we can solve, but it has to start with better analysis and a more resource-driven response.
Mm. Let's take another call. A listener in Champaign, line one. Hi.
Hi. Celeste, I had called earlier, but
right.
I do have another question. You had brought up initially that this is a massive public health issue, and I would be curious about public policy, how the CDC would respond, because it seems to me that sex slaves brought from areas other than those in which they typically live, would also be bringing with them other kinds of vulnerabilities. I would think that it might be a way to mobilize some government monies if people grasped the enormity of the kinds of viruses we talk about, the flu virus, how it isn't a question of whether but when, and certainly these people would be in terrible, terrible health. So if you could address that briefly, this is fascinating. Thank you so much.
Okay.
Again, the public health response is one of the many vectors we need to bring to bear on this issue. In addition to the basic human rights response, the absolute human rights violation that this is, also the security response, national security response, and others. But your caller is right to say that not only are these individuals exposed to disease here, not only does infection of HIV and STDs of them end up spreading through the male consumers who purchase them day after day, week after week, but there could be spread of disease from origin countries. There's not really any hard analysis of this particular aspect of this. We remain just about 10 to 15 years into our understanding of contemporary slavery, if that. And only some of the hard analysis has only started to come about in the last few years. So I would certainly like to see more being done on the public health standpoint vis-a-vis trafficking of human beings.
Mm. Corruption is a huge problem in law enforcement, and you said borders are a big problem. What kinds of things could be done to get at that part of the problem?
In my book, I outline seven tactics that I think must be deployed to obviate many of the hurdles we face now in a more effective response to the eradication of these crimes. And a few of them are specifically deployed to deal with corruption. You've rightfully pointed out, corruption along borders allows individuals to be trafficked from one place to another. More importantly, corruption in local law enforcement allows these crimes to take place in relative daylight. Corruption in the judiciary results in cases that fall apart or are requalified into small charges that just result in a fine and you're back in business. Much of the corruption is driven by low wages. Individuals who are police officers in developing countries make very little money. Prosecutors in Moldova make $150 a month. Judges make $200 a month. A sex trafficker can make tens of thousands of dollars per year per slave through the exploitation of individuals for commercial sex. So a bribe to the judge that's equal to 1 year's income for him is nothing more than a small cost of doing business to the exploiter. And we didn't know that until recently, until I've tried to put together the level of profits these people are enjoying. Now we know. We need massive increases in funding, specialized fast-track courts, specifically focused on these crimes to obviate some of those issues of corruption. We also need an international trafficking and slavery inspection force, operationally similar to the weapons inspectors utilized by the United Nations, to obviate corruption in local law enforcement, focusing on ways to prevent corruption from being a barrier to the increase in the risks and costs, and a more effective intervention in these crimes is crucial. And tactics need to be designed, such as the ones I've suggested, focused on obviating corruption.
Let's take another call. Last one of the day, I believe. We're running down on time. Line one, Urbana. Hi.
I hear a lot of religious folks talking about abortion and gays. I never hear them talking about sex trafficking. I never hear them talking about men using women. I do hear some religious groups saying it's not okay to masturbate. Seems to me that that one of the prongs might be for religious groups to change their tactics and decide that it's okay for men to masturbate instead of using women's bodies to masturbate in, and that we need a public education campaign. What do you think?
Well, again, I certainly think we are not getting enough attention vis-a-vis the slavery issue when it comes to some of the other human rights and civil rights issues the caller mentioned. I will say that there are several faith-based and religious NGOs and organizations that have taken this issue very seriously. There's a very effective nonprofit organization based in Washington, D.C., called the International Justice Mission, which is a Christian organization that is doing tremendous work providing legal representation for exploited individuals, trafficking victims and children, as well as broader interventionist efforts in some of these brothels in Asian countries like Cambodia. So faith-based communities, many that I've encountered, are taking this issue seriously and are doing what they can to mobilize a more effective response.
Mm. One last question here. I don't know if you've heard about this, but the FBI did an operation recently called Operation Cross Country, where it went after children, teenagers who are being forced into prostitution. And apparently it's unusual for the Justice Department, for the FBI to get involved. Any thoughts there?
Well, that's the kind of intervention that we need to scale up massively. I am familiar with that intervention, and I believe there were, and I forget the exact number, 15, 20 or so minors who were rescued. But I calculate more than 10,000 trafficked sex slaves in the United States today. And by the State Department's own admission, there are 15,000 to 20,000 trafficking victims who enter the country each year. So while those 15 or 20 or so individuals whose lives have been now protected, everyone counts. But we need a much more massive transnational response so that we can not just protect 10, 15, or 20 now and then, but hundreds, if not thousands, and then clamp down on the exploiters. There's no excuse. There's no excuse in the world not to clamp down aggressively on individuals who are exploiting people as slaves.
And part of the thinking apparently is that if the federal government goes after these folks who are exploiting people, that they'll be hit with tougher prison sentences than they would get in state criminal courts.
Well, it's prison sentences, but most importantly, economic penalties are crucial. When people are able to make tens of thousands of dollars per year per slave, they have to be hit in the wallet as well. Mm. They can sit in prison and still operate criminal networks that are generating these huge profits. So we also need to elevate their level of sophistication in the financial response, money tracking, electronic surveillance, and a massive increase in the economic penalties associated with slavery crimes, which are often 1/10 or 1/20 the economic penalties of drug trafficking crimes.
Mm. There, we've got to leave it right out of time. Siddharth Kara, thank you for talking with us this afternoon.
It's been my pleasure.
Our guest is the author of Sex Trafficking: Inside the Business of Modern Slavery. The book is published by Columbia University Press. A portion of the proceeds from sales of the book will be donated to the organization Free the Slaves. It's 1:53. Settlement prices should be in from Kansas City and Chicago. Here's Todd Gleason.
Thank you very much, Celeste. Taking a look at the numbers as they settled in Chicago on this Friday afternoon. Futures like this in the wheat pip. Nearby March contract, a 3.5 cent loss for the wheat. Soft red had a high today at 517.5 in the lead option, a low at 506. Settlement price, 510.5, down 3.5 cents. May futures, 3.5 lower as well. 528.5 the high, range to a low of 517. Settlement price at 521.5, 3.5 lower. In July contract, 540.5 the high. Low at 529. Settlement price for the harvest month for the July wheat at 533.25 for the soft red, down 3.5 cents. In Kansas City, March contract 2.25 lower at 552. May at 560, down 2 cents. From the corn pit back in Chicago, 361.25 the high on the day. Low at 348.5. A settlement price at $3.50.75. March corn down 11.25 cents. May futures 369.5. The high, the low at 57. Settlement price 2 above that at $3.59 a bushel, down 11.5 cents. In July futures 379. The high, low at 366.5. Settled at 368.5. 11.75 lower. September 388.5. The high, the low at 77.25. Settlement price at 377.75, down 11.75. In December contract, 401.25 the high, low at 388.5. A settlement price at 391, down 11.25. In the March contract in the corn pit, 413 the high, the low at 401.75. A settlement price there at $4.04, down 11 cents on the afternoon. March oat futures, $1.84.5, a settlement price a half lower. The May down a half at 194. Back in a moment with the numbers from the soybeans and the products.
Hi, this is AM 580 Agriculture Director Dave Dickey. Join us at the Beef House in Covington, Indiana on March 10th for the 2009 All-Day Agriculture Outlook Meeting. Full details are on our website at willag.org. Thanks to these agribusinesses for helping to support this year's meeting: the Andersons, DTN, AgriGold Hybrids, ADM Investment Services, and L&M Commodities.
Now here are the numbers from the Chicago Board of Trade and the bean bit for the afternoon and its products. Nearby March contract at 879 and a quarter high, low at 851. Settlement price at 874 and a half, 5 and a quarter higher. May futures up 3.5 cents, 877 on the high. The low at 49, settlement price at $8.72, up 3.5 in July. 879 and 3/4 the high. The low at 53 and 3/4, settlement price at $8.75, up 1 and 3/4. August soybeans, 2 cents lower. 869 and 3/4 the high. The low at 50, settlement price at $8.64.5, down 2 cents. In November soybeans, 836.5 the high. The low at 816.5. New crop harvest month, $8.27.5. November beans, a loss today of 10 and 1/2 cents. March bean meal futures at 276.40 top. The bottom at 264. Settlement price at $275.80. Up $6.80 on the afternoon. May futures there up $6.60 at $269.80. March bean oil futures 31.66 the high. The low at 30.92. Settled at 30.85, 79 lower. In the May contract, 31.93 the high, the low at 31.10, settled at 31.11, 82 cents lower. And I'll return in just about 9 minutes with the closing mark report. We'll talk with Mike Zuzolo today. He's of Risk Management Commodities Incorporated out of Lafayette, Indiana.
Agricultural programs are made possible by Risk Management Commodities, hosting planning seminars at 6:30 p.m. Tuesday, March 3rd in Watseka, Illinois, and at 3 p.m. Wednesday, March 4th in Terre Haute, Indiana. More information is available at 866-837-9027.
In Chicago at the Merck today, livestock contracts finished mostly on the higher side. February live cattle, 83.65 the high, 81.40 the low, 82.52 and a half the settlement, that down 42 and a half. April, 86.37 and a half the high, 85.35 the low, the settlement 85.92 and a half, that up 10. June, 84.42 and a half the high, 83.45 the low, 83.90 the settlement, that up 15. August, 84.90 the high, 83.75 the low, the settlement 84.22 and a half, no change. March feeder cattle, 93.50 the high, 91.60 the low, 92.60 the settlement, that up 30. April, 94.75 the high, 92.90 the low, 93.87 and a half the settlement, that up 2.5. May, 96.70 the high, 94.95 the low, the settlement 95.50, that down 15. August feeder cattle, 99.05 the high, 97.70 the low, 98.70 the settlement, that up 27 and a half. April lean hog, 61.10 the high, 58.80 the low, 60.90 the settlement, that up 192 and a half. May, 71.50 the high, 69.80 the low, 71.35 the settlement, that up 130. June, 72.80 the high, 71.10 the low, the settlement 72.52 and a half, up 125. July, 74.45 the high, the low 72.70, the settlement 74.35, that up 130. And March pork belly, 78.50 the high, 75.25 the low, 77.70 the settlement, that up 205.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender. Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgrow seed products, including Asgrow's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
Stocks are down, but they're off their lows of the day. The Dow currently off 8 at 71.74. The Nasdaq is up 5 at 13.9.